Premier Christian Newscast.
Hello and welcome to the Premier Christian Newscast. I'm Tim Wyatt. We have to start today with some sad news. Unfortunately, today will be the last episode of the show. Premier are no longer able to support the podcast, and so regrettably, we're going to be drawing it to a close. To wrap up, I thought it would be interesting to look back over the 2 years I've been making this podcast to see what topics have come up the most and the least. What has been making waves in church news? What issues have we been unable to move on from? And what might this tell us about what's going to be hitting the headlines in the years to come? This week, we're joined for one last time by Sam Hales and Emma Fowle from Premier Christianity magazine to look back at what the newscast feed tells us about the state of the church and to consider what stories we expect to be keeping us busy throughout the rest of 2024 and into the future. Welcome, Sam and Emma. Thanks for joining us, as always, for one more time on Premier Christian Newscast. Slightly self-indulgently, to prepare for this, I had a little look back at the podcast feed over the last 2 years to tot up which stories, which ideas, which topics have come up most often as I've tried to follow what is happening in church news. And you won't be surprised to learn that among the top issues, sexuality and divisions over gay marriage is one of the more obvious themes we've been covering. I cotted up 8 separate episodes that have covered different aspects of that story. Do you guys think that will continue to be a massive story for us to cover as in the Christian media over the coming years? The church is going to carry on in, for the foreseeable future, being divided over this?
Yes. Well, Sam, there's a large part of me that really, really hopes it isn't, but I don't think that's going to happen, is it, really? Let's face facts.
Yeah, it's hard to see it going any other way. And there are genuine reasons for that. I mean, this is an issue that people like me talk about as an issue, but I'm always conscious it, for a lot of people, it is their life. It is, I identify this way and I have really strong views on how I'm treated in churches. So there's a really real pastoral dynamic. There's a really real theological dynamic, which is the church has by and large believed one thing for a very long time. Western culture has switched quite dramatically and quite quickly away from a lot of that, and the church is grappling with biblical truth, where culture's going. So there's genuine theological debate. And then I suppose this is really brings us to the question, Tim, is then the church split? Entire denominations being split on this, and then having to figure out, do we try and go a new way? Do we keep to historic teaching? Do we try and have it both ways? And I think as long as Justin Welby, Church of England, Anglican Communion are debating this one, and there is such an emphasis on unity of trying to keep everyone together, as long as you're trying to keep everyone together, an issue like this is not going to go away, because it does. It does divide people. So my gut feeling is very strongly that this one will continue for sure.
Emma, you expressed some reluctance about that. Do you feel burned out on this topic? Do you think people are getting bored of it? Or do you think there is still a kind of insatiable desire to poke and pry into this, you know, this wound, this open kind of rupture in the church?
Well, as usual, Sam brought a whole new level of maturity and sensitivity to my very flippant remark that, yeah, I guess sometimes as a journalist, you kind of, there are days when you wish you could write about something, I guess, a little bit more upbeat than the church arguing amongst itself. And I think there are times when it feels so fractious that it, you know, it upsets me as a Christian. I don't like to have to be always in that space where you're wrestling with this really hard stuff. But Sam's right. It's a real live pastoral issue that affects a lot of people very profoundly. And, you know, I have friends and acquaintances that are personally affected by this. So, yeah, for as long as we need to, we will keep covering it. We will keep trying to decipher what's going on, bring a little bit of wisdom and insight where we can, and try to play our part in and having those conversations well. Yeah, it's not going anywhere quickly, that's for sure. We're seeing more and more denominations having to discuss this, and that's not gonna stop, I don't think. You know, just this week in the magazine we've been proofing the June edition of Premier Christianity, and we're talking about how this is impacting the church in Africa as well. So, you know, it does just go on and on, the impacts. And yeah, we're going to be dealing with that for a while.
It's fair to say, I think the trajectory over the last few years has tended towards churches kind of shifting towards a more affirming position, you might say, liberalizing their teaching, their rules to be more inclusive to LGBT people. Do you think that momentum will continue? That overall, with some exceptions, denominations will shift towards the more liberal end of the spectrum?
I think that's been happening in the West, I agree. It's not necessarily been happening globally. And up until a couple of months ago, Tim, I probably would have agreed with your suggestion there, your analysis there, that it's just going to move in a liberal direction. But it was interesting, just very recently, the Baptists have decided to stick on the traditional view and not allow their ministers to enter into same-sex marriages. So I think for those on the traditional side, that might have given them a little bit of hope, because I think before that, pretty much every time this came up in the news was another denomination is going in a more liberal direction. You can still argue that. I mean, if you look at what General Synod's doing in the Church of England, every time they talk about this, it's those on the more conservative traditional side who will say, we feel like the church is moving in a more liberal direction. So, for example, most recently, this offer of blessing gay couples, traditionalists feel like that's moving in a liberal direction. But of course, it's complicated, because if you speak to those on the liberal end, they'll say, well, we feel like we're losing as well, actually, because we still don't have full gay marriage in the Church of England. And that's one of the things that makes this debate so difficult, is both sides feel like they're losing. And I think when that happens, it makes real, genuine dialogue quite difficult, and people end up just shouting and getting angry at each other because everyone feels like the loser.
I think it's also worth pointing out that some of the more evangelical Pentecostal denominations show absolutely no sign of shifting. So, a lot of the Black British Church denominations, ELIM, AOG, people like that, absolutely, I don't think there's many moves from within those groups of Christian churches to change doctrine or move to a more liberal position. So I don't know. Part of me wonders if we'll get the sort of, that eventually the traditional established denominations will get through whatever they are debating, and then we'll eventually maybe land in this place where you've got some of the churches which have shifted and some which have stuck. And then people will make their choice accordingly. Mm. There's research that suggests that those that are more traditional in doctrine are growing faster than those that are shifting liberally. But I think, again, it will take time to really to see whether that data really bears out.
It does. I certainly agree with you, Emma, that it feels like we're in a big moment of kind of sorting out, in where, in the midst of all the kind of maelstrom, it feels very chaotic. But I do wonder, taking the long view, if you zoom forward to something like 2050 and look back, it will be quite clear that the British church will be fractured into the denominations that are affirming and liberal and are well-established and public and everything's on board with that, and the denominations which are not. And you will have much fewer denominations which are a kind of muddy mix-up of the two groups, which is actually kind of quite common these days, for better or for worse, I guess. And you even see that in the Church of England, where the Conservatives are trying to kind of carve out internal kind of sub church within the church structures where they can keep a kind of doctrinal purity, and there'll be much less of people kind of rubbing shoulders alongside in church structures with those who disagree on. I mean, is that a bad thing, or is that just an inevitable kind of way it's going to go? Should we care about that?
Well, it's a really difficult question, isn't it? I think in some ways, clarity is helpful. It allows individuals to decide which churches they want to be a part of, depending on which side of this they fall on. And I think a lot of the mess, my view of looking in at the Church of England, is because it's so muddled. It says one thing, some of its staff say another. That's an inherently difficult position that you don't get in some of the evangelical Pentecostal traditions, where things are much clearer. So maybe that's helpful. I don't know. There may be other views on that.
Could I tempt you, Sam?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think there's a fairly consistent evangelical view, and I say this hesitantly because I know there are some evangelicals who will say I'm evangelical and I'm progressive on this issue and I support gay marriage. I think we can all agree, though, those evangelicals are in the minority. You know, the most evangelical bodies, Evangelical Alliance, Affinity, FIEC, they hold a traditional perspective on this. And I think that part of the church, understandably, will want to argue this is a gospel issue. They will want to argue that if someone is coming into your church and they say, I'm in a gay marriage, that you either, as a church leader, are saying, fantastic, God loves that about you, God endorses and affirms that, or they're going to say, God's message to you is he loves you. God's message to you is also to repent and turn from sin, in the same way that any of us have to repent and turn from sin. But that's the issue, isn't it? Is this an issue of sexual sin, yes or no? And how you answer that question then affects how you preach the gospel, and how you preach the gospel and the good news affects a huge number of things about your church. So I think that's the problem, is people say, oh, why is the church so obsessed with sex? It's like, well, it's not quite the truth of it from an evangelical perspective. It's more we're obsessed with the gospel, we're obsessed with people coming to know Jesus, and how you answer these tricky subjects of ethics affects how you preach the gospel. So I think as long as that's the issue, you will have most evangelicals saying, well, you actually want clarity on this. And Emma mentions a lot of the really growing evangelical denominations, they are growing. And so there's something there. I don't know whether it speaks to human nature about us liking a bit more certainty and clear teaching. And yes, I'll sign up to that. And I'm not saying that's always a good or a bad thing. But I think that is interesting, that where the church can provide clarity and where the church is remaining closer, arguably, to the historic biblical definition, that is giving people in those churches a bit more security about what we believe in this church. And they're clear on that when it comes to evangelism and sharing the gospel. But it's the last episode. So, you know, if you're really upset with me, then the podcast isn't continuing, and don't worry about it. You don't need to write in and complain, because, you know, I'm sorry to be flippant, because I appreciate everything I've just said will be massively contentious for some people, and I want to be respectful of that. But it's one of the things that makes our jobs as Christian journalists very challenging, in trying to represent the variety of views that exist, and they really truly do on this issue.
It's striking to me that we've talked quite a lot in the conversation around sexuality, end up talking quite a lot about church structures and schisms and governance. And when I was looking back at the list of episodes we've covered on Newscast, that was like things loosely grouped under church governance structure, internal church affairs, was kind of the most common topic. We had 13 separate episodes covering different aspects of that story, which slightly surprised me. Do you think we're too absorbed by this kind of inward focused stuff as Christian media? Do you think we need to start looking harder for stories that are kind of outward focused, rather than constantly writing, podcasting about, you know, all the interesting arguments that internal denominations are having within themselves about various stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting looking at what people read, because we know people are interested in sexuality, because we have the numbers and the dashboards that tell us exactly what articles people read and what they don't read. So there's huge interest around that. I think on the more encouraging side, and picking up what you're saying, Tim, is, you know, we publish lots of stories about real life stories, testimonies, how people have become Christians, how they've been healed, you know, miracles in people's lives. We put a lot of those out in print and online, and those are often very well read as well. And that's the balance, isn't it? Especially for us as people working in magazines, we want someone to have both, right? We want the churchy, the analysis, the structural stuff, and we want the personal God at work today. And the thing I always like to tell people, which I think is a big encouragement, is we are never short of a testimony to print, ever. We have lots and lots and lots of amazing stories of what God is doing, and quite literally don't have the room to print all of them. So, you know, however bad things might look sometimes on a structural level, or the latest census showing there's fewer Christians, it's always worth bearing that in mind, that God's kingdom is advancing. There's lots of great stuff going on as well. I think people get that on a local level. I hope, and I think people, you know, can agree with that, because they see it in their local church, and maybe they come to us for more of the big picture stuff.
What about you, Emma? Do you feel sometimes we get too sucked into kind of inside baseball, to use that analogy, rather than focusing on like the mission, the ministry, the kingdom?
Yeah, for sure. It's such an interesting question, isn't it? I've spent the last sort of 6 weeks talking to people who no longer go to church or who have chosen to do church outside of sort of what we might consider a traditional Sunday gathering. And part of that process has really highlighted, you know, that dichotomy, really, that there are some people who feel really strongly that what we do in the structured church is completely divorced from what they feel their call is as Christians to live a life that, like, you know, shows Jesus's love to their local community. And that is one of the things that came up time and time again in the research was, oh, you know, we spend all this time and energy supporting the structure when and Jesus just wanted us to be out there loving people. So yeah, I think it's a really valid comment, and sometimes it's really helpful to try to make sure we are not spending all of our time immersed in this Christian bubble that you know, on the one level, like you say, means very little to people outside of it, but on the other hand, it does, you know, provide a structure that is home to millions and millions of Christians who should be out there doing the job. So I think it's complicated. And, you know, that bit in the Bible that talks about leaders equipping their people for works of service is kind, you know, it's kind of the same way. If the church structures are working well, they are supporting individual Christians to go out there and to live a life that's full of Jesus, then they're worth it, aren't they? They're worth investing in, they're worth discussing, they're worth analyzing, they're worth us shining a light on it when it goes wrong to try and make it better. But if they're not enabling us to go out there and live those Christian lives, then that's the point where you start sort of thinking, are they fit for purpose anymore? So I would argue that our job as Christian journalists is to do that bit of holding to account, whilst also, like Sam says, also, you know, doing the really fun, lovely stuff of writing all those great stories about individual Christians, because that's important too.
I'm sure you guys get this as well, but quite often when I talk to other Christians about my job and what I do, you get the kind of refrain of, you know, why is there so much negative stories about the church? Why aren't we hearing more positive stories? And I understand the heart of where that comes from. And I think we all could probably, you know, do better at, maybe, as you say, kind of lifting up some of those testimonies that you guys are really good about putting in the magazine. But I always kind of think, like, well, that's like, it's not really what we're here for. Like, we're ultimately here to kind of like shed light in dark places. And like, it's brilliant that like Pastor Joe in a town you've never heard of did an Alpha course and two people became Christians. Like, I'm genuinely pleased about that, but it's not news for a reason, because like, you know, whereas like, if we don't go and try and explain what is going on at General Synod and demystify that process, or, you know, follow up on an investigation into kind of an abuse scandal, then actually those stories will never get told, and that matters. And that makes the church work kind of fall short of where it is to be. So I do sometimes get a little bit frustrated at the kind of endless like kind of critique of Christian journalism. I think sometimes people just don't quite grasp what actually we're trying to achieve here.
I think it's also journalism on the whole, isn't it? Like, people say that about all journalism, and you're kind of like, well, that's all well and good, but the old adage still remains: bad news sells. So, you know, if you want to see more good news stories, people need to like reading more good news stories and buy newspapers and magazines that run more good news stories. Because, you know, that, like Sam says, we have all the stats. We can tell you what stories have got the most hits over the last year on our news sites, on our Premier Christianity sites, and it unfortunately will invariably be a lot of the abuse, the scandals, the wranglings, the arguments, the fallings out, the things people get really agitated about. So in some respects, we need to make sure we're reporting good stuff, but people also need to, you know, part of it is just human nature, and there's not really a lot we can do about that.
Yeah. And there is a job to be done in trying to help people understand what journalism is and what it isn't, which is exactly what you two have just been, you know, saying and putting across. And I have sometimes wondered, you know, if you're a builder, I don't know, you're constructing a wall, does someone wander past and say, well, you're not doing that properly?
I wouldn't lay the bricks that way.
Yeah, I don't know if builders get that. If you're a builder, let me know. But I know that we as journalists get that a lot of, like, well, you're not writing that story right, and that's not the right headline, and, you know, why are you talking about that? It's like, well, there are, you know, and look, goodness, we all know I'm not perfect, and we don't get it right all the time, of course we don't, but there are reasons behind this. And one of the ones I like to explain to people is this idea of news values, So some people have this perception of the media that all of the heads of the BBC and the ITV and Sky, and they all get together and Premier, and we all have a chat about, well, what are we going to cover or what we're not going to cover. And
did you not get invited to that meeting, Sam? That's awkward. Yeah, no, I was there where we hashed it all out for this year. What was news and what wasn't news? That's a bit.
Sadly, I'm not invited to those meetings, and it's even worse than that. I would say this, wouldn't I? Because I'm part of the media elite, but I promise you, those meetings just don't happen. And instead, it's a lot more fluid, and it's this idea of news values. What do you value? And any news coverage, there's things like proximity. So, you know, that is why if a young girl goes missing in London, it's headline news, and it's not headline news if a young girl goes missing in a country 5,000 miles away, because it's proximity, we're closer. So it means something more to me on an emotional level. And you can go through and there's 5 or 6 or 7 different values. The point is stories are decided not by editors getting together and having a big secret meeting. They're decided by what we value as a society. And it's a real challenge for us in the Christian media, because some of our news values in the Christian media are different to the mainstream. So we actually value that God is real and doing miracles, and we're going to report on that in a positive way. A mainstream outlet may not have that as a value, that they might be far more skeptical. So they either won't report those stories or they might sneer at them. But the point is, there is thinking that goes into this stuff. And clearly it's our job as journalists to maybe help explain that more to the readers of, well, this is why we report in a certain way. But we don't always get it right, and we need to be open to feedback. But Emma will have heard many of my rants in private about people not necessarily understanding what we're trying to do. So there's a challenge for us to communicate better why we do what we do.
And we do all the time make decisions against that news values list. You know, we will run stories because they're important, because we need to talk about it. You know, not necessarily, you know, our job is not always just to tickle people's ears or run the stuff that's going to get, you know, online views. Mm. We do every day sort of sit down and prayerfully and thoughtfully and hopefully with the Holy Spirit sort of think, what stuff do we want to cover? And sometimes it's not always the popular stuff, but it's stuff that we feel is important.
Mm.
Yeah, we're balancing two truths there, aren't we? We're balancing, on the one hand, Christians are normal people like everyone else. So just because you're a Christian doesn't mean that you're any less interested in the speech that the Prime Minister made this morning. So you would expect us in our coverage to say Rishi Sunak has said X, Y, Z, because Christians care about that too. On the other hand, we're also balancing the reality that we do, as Emma says, sometimes live by different values, kingdom values. And there was a really lovely example of that. My colleagues in the news team a few months ago decided to lead with, on the main bulletin on Premier Christian Radio, lead with the plight of Christians in Manipur, persecution. That was the lead story. And it wasn't what Rishi Sunak had said that day. So we went against what BBC and Sky and others were broadcasting. We deliberately said, look, there's a time and place for us as Christians being different. But it's both and. You know, some days it's our job to reflect a Christian view on a mainstream story that you've seen on the BBC. And some days it's our job to go against that completely. And I think both of those things are right, depending on what the day is. But as Emma says, it takes wisdom and discernment to know what to do, what's best when. And ultimately, our job is to serve our readers and our audience, and, you know, to put out coverage that is ultimately beneficial and keeps people informed. And again, in that way, we're similar to the mainstream, to inform and to entertain as well at times, because there's nothing wrong with that as well. If people are listening to this completely bored, then we're failing, because people should want to listen to what we're saying.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I never forget when I was doing my journalism training and we were kind of walking through those kind of ideas about, like, what makes something a news story and what isn't. How do we select the news stories? The old adage that, you know, what's in the public interest is not necessarily what is of interest to the public. But how do you codify and understand what exactly it means to be something in the public interest, which is obviously something you can argue about endlessly in secular press, and then even more so from a Christian perspective.
Premier Christian Newscast. Premier Christian Newscast.
But it's very interesting you mentioned Manipur, Sam, because I was going to come on to my surprise, the second most common topic covered on newscasts actually has been persecution, the persecuted church, which I'm quietly quite proud of, actually, that we've managed to get some of those stories from countries. We covered persecution in Pakistan, in Nigeria, in Iran, lots of other countries. Do you think that's a story that, A, gets enough attention, or B, is kind of high enough up the Christian news agenda at the moment?
I mean, I'd be proud of that as well, Tim. I think you've done a great job in putting that issue front and center. When I speak to people who appreciate what we do, this is often one of the things that comes up, is that we are publishing stories that the mainstream ignore. Now, again, we can have a whole debate about why the mainstream are not reporting on Manipur and the rights and wrongs of that. But the point is, that is part of our role at Premier, is to say we want to, you know, raise the plight of persecuted Christians around the world. We do a lot of work with some of the Christian charities like Open Doors who work in this area, and they provide us with a lot of resources to help us hopefully report well on that subject. I think it's a subject that Christians really care about and want to be praying about. And I think it's an important area where we can be different.
Do you think persecution is actually kind of getting worse, or is it actually that we're doing a better job at elevating some of these stories and some of the kind of persecuted church charities are actually just doing a really good job at like getting the stories in our eye lines? Because it feels like there's more coverage than ever before. And I'm like, is that because it's getting worse, or are we just talking about it more?
I wonder if it's both.
Yeah. I think, you know, the rise of social media means that it should, and the internet access means it should be easier to get stories out of countries that might have 30, 40, 50 years ago been very closed off to the West. And that should help stories around persecution, especially when you're talking about places like Korea and Iran and Afghanistan. It's still quite difficult, and there's still lots of issues around anonymity, but you would hope those stories are easier to get. But I do think, and again, I'm only in my 40s, so I've not been around this world long enough to really qualify this. We'd need someone from Open Doors. But a lot of what I hear from Christian persecution charities is that it is getting tougher. Nigeria is now like the place in the world where you're most likely to die for being a Christian, like, which is a horrendous statistic. And, you know, persecution in countries like China is seeming to be getting worse as the government gets more entrenched there. But at the same time, the church is also growing in those places. So that just seems an incredible conundrum and piece of God's grace in amongst that all. So, yeah, I think I really want to take encouragement from that and also challenge, you know, in the UK, we often have this complicated conversation around, are we as Christians being more marginalized stroke persecuted? Should we even use that word when we're not in danger of being beaten up or thrown into prison for our faith most of the time? But also, you know, as we do contend with a more secular society that does definitely marginalize our views, we should take great encouragement from what we're seeing in the persecuted church and be emboldened to pray more for them and for ourselves and for revival.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think this is one of the areas, as Sam mentioned, where you can actually see the kind of clearest value added from having a distinctively Christian media scene, because a lot of these stories are just simply not of interest to the wider world. And the secular press is never going to invest resources in reporting like about house churches in Iran or, you know, complicated inter-ethnic / sectarian tribal conflict in northern Nigeria. And how do we disentangle how faith plays a role and all of that? And actually, you know, if we believe as believers that we all have a responsibility to pray for brothers and sisters who are persecuted, the only way to get those stories out is, you know, primarily through people like Open Doors and Release International and whatever else, but, you know, amplified hopefully by Christian journalists. So yeah, I do, in my kind of more pompous moments, feel like actually that's actually quite an important part of the job.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting, like, we had a review of Michael Palin's latest series of Traveling to Nigeria run on the website last week. And when people have spoken before about those, sometimes what you hear from places like Nigeria is, oh, this is all around climate change, or this is all around this issue. And Christians are saying it's not. It's about persecuting people because of their faith. And the reviewer of Michael Palin's documentary said, yeah, it was great. They loved it, but they really wanted to hear more depth and nuance in how he described the country and the differences between the north and the south and the Muslim influence in the north and the more liberal aspect in the south. And yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it, in sometimes when you're reporting on it in secular media, you either don't have the time, the resource, the interest, or the depth of knowledge in that specialist knowledge in that area to really sort of pull apart those issues. And you hope that as Christian journalists, that's what we bring to the party, that we do have the interest and we do have the skills and the resources to unpack those issues in a little bit more depth, and the will to kind of, yeah, to really push it up the agenda, even if it's not the most newsy or obvious story.
Yeah. Let's move on to another topic. When I was looking at my list, politics, 10 episodes of a newscast cover different aspects of politics, which is quite a broad theme, of course. But I was reflecting on that and wondering, this is great for the clicks, right? You know, talking about the culture war stuff, battles about woke, abortion, buffer zones and free speech and unbanking and all these stuff. Like, the reason these are great for the clicks, but is it actually a bit reductive? Is it a bit shallow? Is it a bit of a distraction from kind of some of the more substantial stories that we could be covering?
What? They're not side issues, Tim. They're like really important issues. Abortion? I think that's exactly where we should be and what we should be doing.
Do you not think we're getting a little bit kind of sidetracked by the to and fro and the froth? And maybe there's a role here for the wisdom saying, actually, what is really important might be, you know, stories about the decline in children going to church, but we get sucked into like fighting about what kids are getting taught in sex ed, because that's what Tory MPs are banging on about in Parliament this week.
I can't remember an episode of this podcast that you would describe as frothy. I think you've had some very... you've had some very serious guests. You've also had me on, but you've had some very serious guests that have given proper analysis to these issues. And you know what children are being taught in sex education, I think Christian parents have every right to be keenly interested and to have very strong views on. Speaking as one myself.
And yeah, just know, to blow my own trumpet, the episode we did on that actually was very good. We had a paediatrician, we had a youth worker, we had a former teacher going in depth. So yeah, do look back in the feed for that one about sex ed in schools. Yeah. To blow newscast own trumpet for a second.
Well, that's the great thing about a podcast format, is you can actually go into the depth over the period of time. It's not a 500 word news story. It is proper analysis, Tim. Proper analysis.
But I mean, I think, you know, being serious for a moment, the Evangelical Alliance last week released some research about Christians and particular evangelicals' interests in the upcoming general election. And what they discovered, surprise, surprise, is that Christians are much more likely to be engaged actively in politics than the general population. So our readership and the people that listen to Premier care about those issues. They want to know what the government is doing about sex ed and abortion and gender self-identification and refugee policy and housing. You know, they generally do care. They really care deeply. They care that, because those are the things, you know, that affect our everyday life. And so I'm really proud that we talk a lot about that. I think you're right. We want to, you know, void, as far as I did get a little bit bored in the end, towards the end of Boris Johnson's reign, publishing opinion piece after opinion piece that just kept pointing out that he had a struggle with telling the truth sometimes, trying to libel myself on the podcast. But yeah, so, you know, sometimes you don't want to get too drawn into the sort of the character assassination and sort of scandals element of it. But generally discussing issues, people want to talk about that. They want to know what political parties think. They want to know how it affects their life. They want to know how to engage with that issue as a Christian.
And I think one of the most valuable things we can try and do, and something you've done, Tim, is demonstrate how there is variety of views on a lot of these subjects. And some of these subjects, you will have, you know, a very clear majority Christian opinion, and our opinion is this. But on other subjects, you get very good Christians on totally different sides. And I think one of the things we've been able to demonstrate with all of our output at Premier is that Christians will vote for any political party. And it's not like there's one Christian party we should all vote for, which is a bit of the situation we've had in America, where the vast majority of white evangelicals identifying with the Republican Party. And I think most British Christians look at that and can see how that can be really quite unhelpful and not ideal. And we don't have that system here in the UK. We have a much more interesting system where Christians could vote for almost any party. And I think we'd be able to reflect that in our coverage, which hopefully brings a level of kind of sensible analysis that's actually helpful for people. It's arguably a bit more complicated because it's not like we have a black and white decision to make. But that is politics, isn't it? It's messy and there's compromise and you don't always get everything you want. But hopefully we can work together, build a bit of understanding. And also just, recognise the fact that there are good Christian MPs, again, across the parties, who are doing their absolute best to represent God in a job that I could never do. I mean, how do you keep your conscience clean while also representing your constituents, while also representing your party? It's very, very difficult. So I think we've been able to give an insight into some of the dilemmas that Christian politicians face as well. Hmm.
And I wonder as well if there's something about the moment we're living in as we kind of come out of this Christendom era, and we're all aware that society is kind of rapidly secularizing and becoming more kind of abstracted and distant from church and from Christian values, that there is going to be a kind of period where the church is kind of figuring out its relationship to this very different and increasingly post-Christian society it's embedded in. And there's going to be points of tension and friction and the parts, institutions will rub up against each other as we try and kind of sketch out a new way of relating to each other, moving out of the kind of Christendom era that we've had for centuries and centuries. And so it shouldn't be surprised that there's a steady stream of stories as we're kind of doing this realignment in real time.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're right.
Bringing us into land, there was only three episodes of newscast that covered children, young people, and about another five that tackled issues around kind of evangelism, mission and ministry.
Yeah, children aren't important, yeah. And evangelism isn't important.
Is where I kind of slightly have to hang my head in shame. Is that a failure? Do you think that
Can I just say, Tim, this is the most honest, self-reflecting podcast I've ever been a part of ever. I just want to say thank you, Tim, for doing a great job. And you're doing an amazing job of kind of reflecting on, should we have done this more? Should we have done that more? I mean, I think it's all been great. But there we go.
Well, that's very kind of you, Sam. I think it's healthy. I think it's helpful and healthy to do a bit of self-reflection, not to beat ourselves up, but to say, you know, because, you know, when you run a podcast like this, I'm always looking for what is in the headlines, you know, what can I jump on? And you don't do kind of big strategic, right, over the next year, of the next 52 yes. episodes, I want
well,
to make
you're
sure...
Not invited. You're not invited to those meetings where it's all decided, where all the media heads get together and we decide we have this many episodes on this subject because there's this big conspiracy to push one thing.
But I guess what I'm trying to tease out is when you're covering, and you guys, when you're putting the magazine together, have the same thing, maybe with slightly longer timelines, but how much do we get sucked into what is right happening this moment, this month that we have to talk about, and how much are we trying to cast a longer view and taking the bigger historical picture? And I was reflecting, you know, three episodes on young people, five on evangelism. It's not amazing, not terrible. Is that something about how symptomatic about how Christian news media can get a bit sidetracked, perhaps, and miss sight of what's kind of eternally important? You know, the primary job of the church is thinking about eternal timescales, not what is Rishi Sunak said this week that we can respond to.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I don't mean to be flippant at all, because actually I can think of a similar dynamic we have in the print magazine. So my turn to be honest. We do themed issues occasionally where we'll pick an issue and really dedicate the whole magazine to that one issue. And I'm trying to think what we've done. We did the Windrush issue. We did when the Queen passed away, everything was about the Queen. And we're planning one on sport, which we're really excited about. But of course, if you were to take a step back and say, what are the most important issues for the church and for Christians today? Like, would you have picked any of those three? I'm not sure if you would. And the missing one for me is the one you just mentioned, which is evangelism or mission. So I'm already thinking, I think I need to do it. You know, if you were to just take a massive step back and say, you've got a Christian magazine, what's the big theme you're going to do? I think evangelism, mission, it has to be in there. It has to be because, I mean, well, let's just get biblical for a minute. Jesus said, go into all the world and preach the good news. So and even if you want to ignore Jesus' words, which is never a good thing to do, but if you were to put that to one side, you'd just practically say, well, we've got a problem in the West, which is not many people are coming into our churches and the number of people identifying as Christians is going down, so maybe we need to redouble our efforts to share the good news. So yeah, I think that's a massive challenge for me and for us in how are we helping, and this is where it gets hard, right? Because no one wants to read an article or listen to a podcast that's just, you're all doing a really bad job, you all need to share your faith more often, You know, no one wants that. So how can we creatively help one another and help the church to just get a bit better at sharing our faith? What does that look like? And if you've got ideas, I'd love to hear from you. Because it's not easy, because otherwise we just do evangelism is important. But you know that already. Or, you know, the church is declining. You know that already. You know, what can we do to actually turn this around? I think is a huge issue for us to all be considering.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot like we've touched on in different ways with the earlier subjects we've talked about, these are the issues that aren't necessarily really headline newsy. And so they do often slip under the radar. And because the mainstream media is never talking about them, and there aren't those big flashy headlines, they do sometimes fall by the wayside. I'm particularly passionate about children and young people. And sometimes we are also a little bit guilty of hiving that off to one side. You know, in the past we've had a separate youth work magazine and we've gone, oh, we'll talk about children and young people over there, we don't need to deal with that. And that's not necessarily helpful either all the time, because sometimes it needs all of the church to be talking about that, whether or not you have a particular interest in children and young people because you are a children's worker or a youth worker, or because you have kids, because you have grandkids. You know, if we really are the family of God, then it is all of our responsibility to pass on the faith to the next generation, whether we're biologically related to them or employed to work with them or not. And I'm really, really keen to do more of that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, maybe, yeah, like, there you go. This is all of our little wake up moment to remember the things that we do actually value that maybe we don't put on the agendas often enough.
Yeah.
Sam, once we've done mission evangelism, we'll be doing reaching the next generation for God.
Great. Yes, that sounds like an important themed issue. I mean, another way of thinking about it is just covers. What do we put on the cover and what do we not put on the cover? Really useful questions to be thinking through, and just making sure that's our desire, is to have a really good representative spread of both what people want to read about and also where we feel like we can make a difference as Premier and highlight an issue that people weren't aware of but should be. So they're great conversations to be having.
And that's the tension, like we mentioned earlier, is how do you strike the balance of, this is what people want to read, so we'll give it to them, or want to listen to, but this is what people should be reading and what they should listen to, and we'll try and give them some of that as well. And if you go too far either end of the spectrum, you either end up just holding up a mirror to what people's desires, and that could be quite unhealthy, or it's a really preachy, kind of pompous, wagging finger, and people drift away because it's not interesting, it's not entertaining. Just before we close then, are there any other kind of big themes, big topics that you expect to be coming back to time and time again in the coming years as Christian journalists that we haven't touched on yet?
Oh, crikey, let's hope revival's up there.
Amen.
Preach it, sister.
That'd keep us busy, wouldn't it? Can you imagine how busy we'd be?
Yeah, I wonder what it must have been like for, you know, when those revivals did happen in the past. You know, in your, you know, a church newspaper in Wales, in the valleys, and suddenly, like overnight, there are hundreds of people every week coming to faith. Like, yeah, it must have been not only exciting but also kind of like professionally fascinating to know, like, where, what stories are you telling here, and where do you go from there?
It was interesting. It's the other weekend. A church in St Aldate's said they had a particularly outstanding weekend of people coming to know Jesus, and the phrase they used was, it broke our systems. And when I read that, I did think of revivals, because that's what people say, is you have this incredible influx that your systems can't keep up with it. So yeah, what systems here at Premier would be broken if revival happened? It would all get a bit messy, but my goodness, wouldn't we love it?
Yeah.
I think that's a wonderful theme that we could pray that would keep us very, very busy. I'm struggling to think of anything else off the top of my head. I mean, unless you go in the kind of more tech route of ChatGPT and AI and how that might take over the world, and if we'll end up with, God forbid, some sort of AI-powered vicar serving communion rather than a real-life human being. I mean, I do think that would be awful, but... Who knows? Who knows what the future might hold?
I guess the one big theme that we haven't touched on yet that does seem to take up a lot of our time is sadly the one around abuse and safeguarding. And that's a kind of perennial topic, isn't it, in the Christian media? And I'll be honest, I'm so kind of battered and bruised by these stories, I can't really dare to dream that we're going to go another year or two without another scandal, another shocking disclosure of abuse by a prominent church figure. So I'm sure I have no doubt, unfortunately, you guys will be covering that in the mag and me elsewhere for time
and
to
no
come.
No prizes for guessing which one we'd rather write about, Revival or Scandal. Yeah. But you're right, Tim. Unfortunately, that's not going away. And I don't think we can underestimate the impact that's had on all of us and the demoralizing impact that can have.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and also just talking about systems sort of being broken did remind me that we're actually in Mental Health Awareness Week as we're recording this. And that's a subject that we just see coming up time and time and time again, and particularly amongst younger people. And I'm really interested just personally in how we build resilience in our young people, going back to the issue of children in the church. Now, how do we disciple and build our young people to people who can really handle the storms of life that are going to come? I think is a broader societal question, but it's one of those areas where I'd like to think the church can play its part as well.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, that'll tie us up there. Slightly more positive note to think about than abuse and safeguarding. Thank you so much, Emma and Sam, as always, not just today, but for all those other episodes over the last couple of years. It's been fantastic having you and your insight and experience and reflections. I'm sure the listeners have enjoyed that as well. And thank you very much to everyone for listening. I've really, it's been an absolute privilege to be able to bring you some of these stories and analysis over the last few years. Bye-bye. Well, that's all, folks. Thank you so much for listening. Whether this was your first ever newscast or you've been a faithful follower for the last 2 years, I'm really grateful to everyone for being part of this. It's been a lot of fun for me personally making these, and I hope they've been interesting, informative, and maybe even occasionally entertaining for you also along the way. I'm still going to be writing about church news every month in Christianity Magazine and as well as many other outlets. And of course, you can get a weekly dose of church news analysis and commentary from my Substack newsletter, The Critical Friend. To sign up for free, just visit tswyatt.substack.com. I should probably also mention I actually co-host another Premier podcast, which is going nowhere. It's called Matters of Life and Death, and each week I sit down with my dad, the doctor, scientist and author John Wyatt, to think through how Christians can respond to new questions thrown up by advances in technology, science, healthcare, culture and ethics. You can find that in all good podcast apps. Just search for Matters of Life and Death. Thanks again, and goodbye.
Premier Christian Newscast.